Today's guest on the podcast is Canadian producer Thomas Batchelder. We talk the nature of terroir, Canadian solidarity, and the grapes of the future. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Thomas Batchelder, and I'm here with Batchelder, which my wife and I, it's a micro-negoce based in Niagara. We also make wines in Burgundy and Oregon, but here we're here with our Canadian brothers and sisters, so we only have our Canadian wines here. I also the winemaker for Domaine Caylus, which was right beside Batchelder here. That is a domain where Batchelder is a micro-negoce, which, as you know, was developed in Burgundy because the youngsters coming out, even if they came from wine families, could not afford the price of land. So we got this idea in Burgundy. And we're Quebecers who started out life at wine school in Beaune. And so we were baptized, brainwashed in Beaune and into making Chardonnay and Pinot only. And we've only sort of recently branched out into Aligoté and Gamay Noir. Basically, I think what we're trying to do now is discover and isolate New World terroirs and impress with subtlety, not impress with bombast. So everything we do is either barrel fermented or barrel aged with extremely long élevage. In that way, the oak gets digested. And what you're really looking for with barrel élevage is more tension, less varietal component, and more terroir component, right? As the wine loses its baby fat and becomes more like itself. You can see the facial bone structure more after 16 months in the barrel. So these aren't cheap wines. They aren't inexpensive wines, but they are wines made with passion and love. Batchelder is making about 2,500 cases a year in Niagara. Any of these single vineyards you see are four barrels or 1,200 bottles for the world. And Caylus is headed for 6,000 cases, but the vintages we're showing are about 3,000 cases as we get up to our full potential of the Domaine Organic Vineyard. So here we go. Would you like to taste some Niagara?
Yeah, let's already get the,
So first I'd like to define the concept. In Burgundy, you call it Village, Premier Cru, and Grand Cru. And in Niagara, we call it Niagara. Just as in Oregon, you'd call it the Willamette Valley. Here we have first our Niagara, and then we move up to the Premier Cruz, or put another way, the single vineyards. So this is a blend of three single vineyards, Saunders in Beamsville, and Wismer Foxcroft, and Wismer Wingfield, both in Vineland. So, you know, we're looking for tension, elegance, good length. And I think you'll see that Niagara's vocation, we often say, oh, we're picking Chardonnay after the aromatics, and by the aromatics I mean Pinot Gris and Riesling and Pinot Blanc. And what actually happens is you realize even after barrel ferment, Niagara is very aromatic for Chardonnay as well. It's also an aromatic variety. The Niagara would be used oak barrels with about 15% new, no more. Okay. Whereas the single vineyards would all be about 18-20% new. And the idea is, if you choose your new oak yourself, and these are subtle Damme barrels from Vosges region and the Allier region and the Jura region, if you choose your oak barrels yourself, you can choose for subtlety. So we choose 3-year air dry, which means you pay more for 3-year air dried, but you get less effective oak. But it's not the oak we're after. It's the oxygenation that comes in. And new barrels are more porous than old barrels, right? Which old barrels, the staves are impregnated with past wines. So, they have. So when you taste a 4-year-old barrel with me, when you come to the cellar someday, I hope, you'll taste that the old barrels are mineral, tight, direct. The new barrels, aside from the new oak taste, have great plushness and great fullness and great purity. So you have to buy some new barrels. Like, whether the movement is for or against new oak in any given epoch, you have to buy some new, or else you're only buying your neighbor's choice of used barrels, your neighbor's choice of your neighbor's funk. You're buying your neighbor's problems. And so we create our own problems by buying our new barrels. Because we're all wild yeast. You know, we're all wild yeast, so we have to be very patient, and our fingernails are not very long because they get bitten to the quick as we wait for ferments to happen. So this is Wismer Foxcroft now, which is in Vineland, quite close to the lake, but on the bench. So a great sort of saline sense of minerality on the finish. See that very clean yet slightly savory finish?
Yeah.
So that's the Foxcroft. And one more white, just because I want you. This is 800 meters south of the other one, and it is very much our Grand Cru. I don't think Canada will be ever classified, but if it were, there's just a sense of nobility here, and what the French call race, a breeding, what the English call breeding, that is just from where the vineyard is. Same, everything we do has the same oak regime, same length of time, right? So it's the barrels from here and that other Foxcroft that get declassified into Niagara. Niagara's less expensive, but this is the focus of four or five of our best barrels. You see that clean, clear mineral? I mean, you need food with this wine, right?
Yes, it's certainly the most gastronomic of the three, but still, for me, quite drinkable.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, it's 15 and we're sitting here in 18, so it has had its time. It's had a year in bottle. So we make quite a few single vineyard Pinots, but this Lowry is probably the most interesting. It's a 1984 planting, which if you're in Burgundy sounds recent, but in Canada that sounds a long time ago. It's a very light color because it is some old suitcase clones. They're not defined clones, but the vines are old. And so despite the fact that they don't give much color, they give a fabulous kind of feminine minerality. It's explosive in the mouth and gives you a fabulous kind of slaty minerality on the finish. That's the sense of place that we're all looking for. We've been with Liberty for about 6 years now, but when we do tastings with them, people are constantly discovering Canada. And I think their surprise is mostly around not the fact that Canada, which is, you know, is it igloos and sort of mounted police and stuff? How can we do wines that get ripe? It's not that. I think they're mostly surprised by how elegant these wines can be and how full of limestone minerality. And with Burgundy being so expensive, it's nice to find Chardonnays and Pinots that have that kind of minerality at a lesser price.
So I was particularly interested to see that you make wines in three different distinct regions. So you make wine in Burgundy, in Oregon, and in Niagara. I'm just keen for you to paint us a picture and, I guess, draw out what are the things that you can take from one of those regions or two or three of them and combine and bring forward into another.
Right. Well, people love to try to trap me and say, so which region do you like best? And if they're Canadian, they want me to say Canada. And if they're from Oregon, where we spent, our girls were young when we were living in Oregon before we started Batch Elder, they want me to say Oregon. And I always say, Burgundy is the motherland, and they're my favorite wines in the world. But I'm surprised that Oregon can be as elegant as it is. And I'm, as a Canadian, but also as a winemaker, I love what Niagara does with the limestone soils. Not enough Pinot regions have limestone soils. So, but what I've learned is that the commonality between Oregon and Niagara is fairly young plantations, 20 to 30 years. You get wide spacings, so about 4,000 vines per hectare, and tall trellises, nearly as tall as us. And so what you get from that is more fruit. It's not like the new world is new, therefore more fruity. No, it might be less fruity, but it is more fruity because these got these great sun-capturing trellises, right, that are the width of the most narrow tractors, and you capture more sun, and there's more fruit in the wines. There's also less vines per hectare, so then a little less minerality and a little more fruit. In Burgundy, there's so much competition among the vines that the vines, in the search for water from the roots, they bring up minerality. That said, Oregon has a lovely sandstone sedimentary minerality that's sort of savory. Niagara feels like a Burgundy after Oregon until you get a real Burgundy, and that seems very tight and closed in after the other two. But both offer really interesting alternatives to Burgundy, which frankly is very pricey these days, right? And cool climate versions. And I think we could talk about Chardonnay, but Pinot should have some red fruit. Yes, Pinot that are all blackberry and blueberry and cassis can be interesting and worthy wines, but the ones that really make you want to sit down and have some duck or some chicken are the ones, or some salmon, are the Pinots that have that red fruit where you're going, is this red or black raspberry? And are there some mulberries in there, or is this fresh strawberry? You know, and I think that is what Niagara does so well, you know. But I have definitely learned, if I could tell you one thing about the New World, in Burgundy, I'm thrilled to work with vineyards that I'm dreamed of working. That's always been my dream. But I slowly realized that in the New World, you get to be like the monks of Burgundy 1,000 years ago. You get to discover the vineyards. And really, when you keep the east, center, and west of a vineyard apart, you discover that they taste different. What is the one you're going to single vineyard? What part of the vineyard? And sometimes it's the one that's the most feminine. Sometimes it's the part that's the most butch. Sometimes it's the part that has a bloody aspect through the iron in the soil. Sometimes you're not particularly attracted to it, but it's a character people can hang on to. And you say, well, whether this is my favorite part of the vineyard or not, this is the part of the vineyard that speaks to me the most. And in real time, you're defining vineyards, and that's way more thrilling than working in Burgundy, although Burgundy is thrilling for other reasons. So I put it to you another way. If I say to you, this Lowry vineyard is old vines and it has no color, as I just did, but it has an amazing slaty finish, and you look at it, totally new to it, and you agree with me, you've just reinforced not only what I'm doing, but our interpretation of the Lowry vineyard, which nobody's done before, because it's New World. And because a lot of people in the New World, they want sort of an entry level and a reserve. And they think in those terms, I want a blended wine, and then I want something with more sense of place. So I'm looking in every vineyard, which goes into the blend and which is the sense of place wine, right? We want to get beyond varietal, beyond Ontario, beyond Canada or Oregon, and we want to get to a vineyard that somebody can dream of going and walking in, even if they never go. The fact is they are buying a piece of that vineyard when they buy it, right?
Yeah, I really love that very eloquent description there. And I think the thing that just comes to mind to me is the thing about, you're being like the monks several hundred years ago. It's almost like time travel. And in a sense, you know, this kind of old world versus new world, it's really unfair because you're not comparing apples and apples. And so I think that idea that, we have to think of it as sort of stepping back in time, I think it gives a fairer framework for the discussion.
I would love to say one more thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would be good. So believing that the old world has terroir just because it's been grandfathered in is unfair. There's terroir here. We just have to discover it. And we have to look at what it's saying to us and get our ego out of the way and get our winemaking style out of the way. And that's what's so brilliant about the Burgundian techniques. When you use Burgundian techniques, you're not copying Burgundy. Their interest is showing the difference, for instance, between Beaune, you know, Pommard and Volnay. So my interest might be in showing the difference between Vineland, Jordan, and Beamsville on the Niagara Bench, or even parts of vineyards that people... So it's a bit adolescent to just do a reserve wine all the time, and it's more real to try to quarter off a vineyard and put it in a glass. Wismer Park is on red soil and has a little bit more of an irony taste, like you're having steak tartare on the finish, or like you bit your tongue. And this is particularly apt after our last conversation, because what happened is I declassified this for 4 years until I realized, that's the part that I should be paying attention to. Wismer Park and this irony taste in the mouth, I thought was a default for a couple of years until I had it measured at the lab and it didn't have a fault. I thought it was a wild yeast default. And it's just a very particular... Imagine when you were a kid with your brothers and sisters that your parents said, well, he's like this and she's like this. And actually they came to realize, no, that part, you know, or if you have kids, the kid who is the kid who's just like you your favorite, or is the kid who pushes back against you your favorite? Now, you shouldn't have favorites, but maybe the one who pushes back, you actually like that spirit a bit. And this wine pushes back, right? It pushes back. It isn't easy to drink. It has a sort of an irony tension in it. Caylus was a French Sulpician who came up from France through Montreal to Lake Ontario. And in fact, Caylus is 12 Montrealers who, to be the first Quebecers who invested in Ontario, made a Domaine organically grown winery. And we have here both Reserve and Grand Reserve here from 13. We've been drinking 15 here, and I'd like you to try them. Okay, yeah. You ready for it?
Yeah.
Caylus is a mixture of Beamsville and Jordan. Okay, so two different terroirs than you've had with Batchelder. So a very different appeal. And this is the reserve level, which is the most juicy, rich, but still mineral barrels from the center blocks. So, lovely, eh? It's a totally different expression. So people say to me when they ask about Caylus, they say, how do you explain the differences between the Batchelder Pinots and the Caylus Pinots? And I say, different terroirs. Everything's done the same way. Why I wanted you to taste these wines is because as you go up to the Grand Reserve of Caylus, which is their Grand Cru, you don't get any more concentrated. What you get is the finest parcel we have in the Eastern Bloc, done with subtlety. Lots of wine is declassified out of here to get to a real purity. And I think you'll see a great finesse and great length of fruit flavor. A lot of wines carry through to the finish on alcohol, that bit of alcohol warmth. This carries on just solid fruit, lots of energy and lots of tension. So what I'm excited about in Canada is that we have about, both in British Columbia and in Ontario, we have far too many grapes in the ground. And I think both BC and Niagara are coming to a realization that we've got to concentrate on 4, 5, or 6 key varietals and do them excellently. And the part that's not so obvious about that sounds like a marketing statement, but as these varietals that are ideally placed in your appellations, as they start to be liked more and more, people plant more of them. And so, like, if we get Marechal Foch and Vidal and Baco Noir out of the way off some of the best sites and bring in Chardonnay, Pinot, Gamay, you know, bring in those grapes, Riesling, that really work in Ontario, then we'll find the best sites. And then we'll have a more interesting offer to the world and more of it. Right now it's tiny, tiny. These single vineyards you're tasting are 4 barrels, 1,200 bottles, right? So I think the future puts Ontario and also the Okanagan Valley, although there's other valleys represented in this room, puts them seriously on the world map, and we just need more of us. We're getting to a critical mass with winemaking, and now we need more hectares under vine by eliminating the things that aren't working. And one thing I want to give you about today that I'm sure nobody else has mentioned is BC is 4,000 kilometers away from us, so even though we know these guys and gals, we don't see them every day. And so when we come to London, it's not only an opportunity to come to market, it's an opportunity to see our brothers and sisters and feel that there is a co-effort, a Team Canada. And I think that's very important, and we're all very aware of that.
Thank you to Thomas for making time to speak with me on the day. Please check out his contact details below. And if you've got any feedback on today, I'd love to hear from you. My Instagram and Facebook are at InterpretingWine. And my email, hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.